Welcome to Spiritual Cartel's meeting of Cocaine Anonymous, Fire in the Booth Friday. Tonight, we welcome Kimia to share with us. And Kimia, it is over to you.
There you go. Thank you so much, Purdy, and welcome everybody. Thanks to the meeting crew, the service crew, the behind the scenes, to the behind the scenes. I am so well aware of what it takes to show up, not just in that individual capacity of a body and a soul that gets out of bed, but the unity of service that brings this crew together and makes it what it is for you. So thank you. I think we should all take a moment to send our gratitude to the ones who have shown us the example of how to show up in this type of fellowship. They've set the model for a behavior that precedes our ideals. It's action-based. And I appreciate every single soul that is here today in that unity. You're speaking really loud. Maybe for the next 30 minutes, you're going to be hearing me, but I'm hoping that you will find a conduit through which you can hear you. You can hear the you that this book talks about as deeply and fundamentally being embedded in a conception of a power that restores us. So in that, you get a little bit closer to what we talk about when we talk about a power that truly gifts us back, the power to make decisions, the power to show up and be there for someone. So welcome. My name is Kimia. I am currently joining you from Canada. And I'm so glad that I was asked to speak here so that I can bring in the solution that has worked for me. The solution that is right at our reach if we are willing. And the essentials are very simple. So I want to welcome the newcomer because it wasn't simple when I was a newcomer. I came into the rooms of CA hating everybody. I have this disease where I hate you before you hate me. I dislike you before you dislike me. I judge you before you even begin to take a thought about me. But CA taught me what it means to be in that unconditional love that this book talks about as that act of passing it on to someone else. Because you taught me that it's okay to be angry. It's okay to be fearful. It's okay that you're broken and busted and disgusted, as my friend Anthony B says. Today, I can tell you that I am lifted. I am loved. I am loving. I am living. Something has happened. So, if you're at that turning point to the newcomer, to the returning addict, to the one who didn't get a call from the dealer because the dealer's out, there must be a reason why you were called in to this room in particular, hearing what you're going to hear. And it's not about what I say, it's about what will resonate with you. Allow some space for that. And to the ones that have come before us and to the ones that will come after us, every single parent, caretaker, guardian that is in recovery and doing this work, I love you, I respect you, I cherish you, I see you. I will be here when you need to call someone. My number is beside my name for a good reason. Purdy just said it. We sponsor here. See, these words didn't mean shit to me when I came into CA. I wanted to kill everybody. And I thought everybody was out to get me. I didn't belong. I did not look, speak, act, or think like anybody else. That's my disease. It wants me to remain unique. So I stay in that cloak of denial and crown of arrogance. I can tell you how to live. With no program, no God, no sponsor, I can give you a recipe of a life that I think is successful, but brings me to desperation. So, yeah, I did come to the rooms of CA, absolutely desperate and dying, a walking zombie. Did it stop me? Well, today I know that I'm the type of addict, as it says on page 44, I have no control over how much I've taken, and I cannot stop. If I'm constantly in this chasm, in this denial, in this struggle, in this fight against this definition, I am going to die. It says we go to the gates of insanity and death. I go to death first. Suicidal, homicidal. I can have the best job, best house, best car, best partner, best of everything, and still die. Today, I know using is not an option. Today, I equally know this book talks about a disease that is centered in the mind. The act of using and resorting to an outside source for an internal problem no longer functions. I see it as a failed strategy. But when the using starts, guess what? The thinking doesn't stop. When the using stops, the thinking still doesn't stop. So how do I go about that? And this is not to vilify thoughts. It's just the quality of thoughts I take when I am restless, irritable, discontented in my disease, selfish and self-centered, and I come off as the most loving, giving, caring person. Because even in sobriety, I'm capable of being that asshole you don't want to be in front of in a coffee shop. I'm the same person you don't want to be in front of on the roads driving. I'm not a delight for you to meet. So it's possible for me to be in sobriety, a condition where the using, the acting out behavior stops, but I am still not a contribution to this world, to myself, cannot have relationships. This book talks about bedevilments. I want to keep it simple for the newcomer because you are the reason why we're here. If you're a returning addict, I know some of you. I know that some of us might be only a few hours sober in this moment until the next moment, the Zoom ends. I could be on that next call. You could be on that next call with the next dealer. But when the dealer calls stop, the fear, the obsession, the compulsion, the constant controlling, managing, murdering of others doesn't stop. So, I'm going to take it back to a little bit of basics here. This book talks about a condition, a craving, an allergy. I can't take one. Can't take one of anything. Once I start, I can't stop. And I have no control over how much I've taken. So, it says, we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol, drugs, thoughts on these chronic addicts is manifestation of an allergy. See, it says chronic. I have to make that distinction. I cannot come to you and speak of a solution if I'm still under this illusion that I am an acute addict. No, I'm not cute. Not acute. There's nothing cute or acute about this disease. Yes, acute means severe and sudden, but chronic means long developing, ongoing condition. And I have to start seeing this ongoing condition as something that it says the phenomena of craving is limited to this class, chronic class of an addict, and never occurs in an average temperate drinker, user, thinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol, drugs, mind-altering substances, including thoughts, relationships, love, sex, porn, work, money. Right. And once having found the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, and their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. I bet everyone in this room can remember a moment when your problems piled up and it was astonishingly difficult, impossible to solve. I'm going to die. That's the reality. That's what I came into the rooms of CA with. And you were the ones telling me there is a solution. Stick around, stay. Here's my phone number. Call me. How many numbers I didn't call, but when I was ready to make that call, because we'll come to it, it comes to a point where you have two options, right? You either die or you say yes to help. I was already dead. So, yes to help was the only option there. It also says people drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol using people, places, and things. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate truth from the false. How many people in this room can say that?
that I know this is injurious. I know it's killing me. It's killing my partner, my children, my family, my work, my life, my soul, my body, the entirety of my spiritual and physical conditioning, but cannot stop. I can't tell true from the false. I have a craving. An allergy has been set off. Even in sobriety, this allergy can be set off. The biggest contribution to that is fear. We're going to get to fear in a moment. I'm mindful. It talks about a solution to this condition we just reviewed. And I consider this as a condition that does have a solution. Thankfully, today I'm aware of that, a psychic change. It says suddenly, the addict finds themselves easily able to control their desire for alcohol, drinking, using, thinking, acting out, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. Simplicity. I don't come into program with a messed up mind and a messed up body thinking I need simplicity. No, I am made out of complications of a disease that is beyond me. Problem is that my head, the liar, is going to tell me that's not the case. But when we finally come to a point when we're desperate enough, the definition of a bottom is very different from dip for different people. Definition of the basement to that bottom is another realm, right? So this book talks about this thing in one of the stories. Page 425, it says, looking back, that may have been the first healthy decision I ever made with respect to alcohol. One definition of a bottom is the point when the last thing you lost or the next thing you're about to lose, including your life, is more important to you than booze, than cocaine, than alcohol, than people, places, things, thoughts. It says that point is different for everyone, and some of us die before we get there. Absolutely, we do. So when I get to a point where life has just become so unmanageable, I have this desperation of a dying person. I know it. I'm gonna die. I am dead. It's not gonna go on. I come into these rooms and you tell me there is a solution for this. Get a sponsor. So get a sponsor. Maybe you've had many sponsors and it didn't work. Get it with the willingness, the rigor, the honesty, and the open-mindedness of a person who has no other way. The softer way hasn't worked for me. I don't know if you're here, if it has worked for you. The easier, softer way, the simpler way has, the easier, softer way hasn't. I want to get into this topic of fear because, regardless of where you are with your sobriety today, how many hours, how many days you're sober, counting or not, will be right there, like the oxygen in the room. And I cannot live life fearing fear. That really sets off this allergy we just talked about. This concept of what the book talks about, it says, it's an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. Right? Shot through with it. So here I am thinking, when you ask me the question, what are you afraid of? You're in your inventory and you're doing a fear inventory. And you say, what are you afraid of? And I'm looking for things I fear. But it says, it's the fabric of my existence. Just as is, it's everywhere, it's everything. And fear doesn't often just show up as a box of paralyzing thoughts. Fear sometimes shows up as anger, as resentment, as confusion, compulsion, apprehension. It shows up as mental anxiety. Can't organize anything in my mind or in my schedule. Can't show up to my appointment. Can't get out of bed, can't take a phone call, can't make a phone call, can't look at people in the eyes. They're about to get me, they're out to get me, right? So it says it set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. Kimia definitely felt she didn't deserve nothing, none of that. And I'll tell you today, when I speak God, there is no aftertaste. I've made my amends with the word God and the conception of a power that is in love with me. That's why I love this book, talking about get a conception you can love, get a conception you want to listen to and talk to and stay for the answers. Get a conception that is so much bigger than your fears. It will come through for you regardless of how tight it gets, regardless of how dark it gets. It will come through for you. So today I speak of that, even though I come from an agnostic atheist family. The idea of institutionalized religion is like, that's what my parents ran away from. But today I don't lead with the chin with the family, do I? I speak to those who understand the power. Many of us have been saved by a power in this room, but many of us can also say that that power did not stop us from using, thinking, drinking, snorting. It didn't stop us. That's why we're here. But that power can help us if we truly seek it. It talks about trains of circumstances that brought me to my misfortune I don't think I deserve. It means I take those thoughts, I set those things in motion. I have this role of thought taking. Right? So it says, but did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Yes, I did. Today I can see that I have a disease. It's a parasite. It pretends to be the host, and the host being me, I believe it. So when fear shows up as anger, when fear shows up as discontentment, restlessness, distrust, what people think about me, validation seeking, apprehension, doubt, worry, anxiety, body paralyzed, when that happens, I know that somewhere I took the first thought. This program teaches me how to catch that. This program teaches me that that potential is there for all of us, regardless of where you are today. Regardless of how restless you are, just listening to this today. I want to speak to the restless soul because I feel you. I feel you. Stay around long enough. These miracles do happen. The instructions are there if I'm willing to follow them. I have to remain teachable, become teachable. My false pride is at the top of my blockage. It will always take me to the gates of insanity and death really quick. But today I can put my hand up and say, I am selfish. I'm self-centered. I'm driven by 100,000 forms of fear, self-pity, self-seeking. Tell me what I'm missing. I'm willing to tell the truth to another fellow and ask them to tell me, where's my blind spot? Get me to God. That's the difference. I'm an addict that doesn't use anymore. That's the ex-problem drinker that it talks about is no greater, no less than you. We are the same. It says sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Fear has stolen from me so much. I know you agree. It steals my time, my money, my relationships. My intuitive nature connected to a will beyond me. It kills all my abilities, my future, my willingness to live. Steals all. It seems to cause more trouble. Absolutely, it does. How many of us have sat in the fear of something happening? And that something is always in the future. My job is to worry about stuff visiting, isn't it? I have to delude myself with the lie that neurosis is normal. It says the alcoholic's life is the only normal life. It's the only normal life I know to be in fear, to be dominated by this fear. This book also talks about an imperious urge. That's the compulsion. So it shows itself as that too. I'm continually solving problems that haven't occurred yet. Your problems. I never have a problem, do I? I want to solve your problems and focus on you. I'm obsessed with me, and the parasite owns me. It sets in motions, it says. That's the self-fulfilling prophecy, my fellows. The expectation or the belief that can influence your behaviors, thus causing the belief to come true. What I fear materializes and becomes reality. It's the belief about what will happen drives the action that makes that outcome ultimately come to pass. The more I lose, the tighter I hold, and it keeps slipping. I have these knee-jerk reactions to life. I hate you before you hate me. Remember that. I dump you before you dump me. I'm in a constant state of anxiety, always defensive, constantly watching, policing, controlling others. And it doesn't matter how long I've been sober, I cannot see myself in that, and I cannot distinguish true from the false. So into the solution we go, my favorite. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. Again, if these instructions are super new to you because you don't have a sponsor, get a sponsor. I saw a lot of people putting their hands up. My number is right beside me. I match you with someone. Someone who's willing to pass this on to you so you can do these instructions, go through the steps. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment and connection with them. Why? Why am I putting down shit I don't have connection to? Because that's the unfinished business I get to learn. These instructions, they get reviewed in step eight. It says we made a list. Guess what? We made a list right here, and no resentment in connection with them. Sometimes with resentments, maybe you can brush it off. Maybe you can pray it and give it to God. But often the sticky mind wants to hold on to it. I got to put it down on paper. It says we asked ourselves why we had them. Again, I'm an overthinker. I'm addicted to thoughts. I get too deep in that, I'm dead. I have to simplify, and this book does that. You have these resentments every time, Kimia, because you are self-centered, selfish, and you are driven by 100 forms of fear. You're afraid. And there's no guilt in that. Guilt is also fear. If I can admit that, I can see that why I had them every time comes down to the same blockages on my column four. I'm angry, I'm resentful, I'm fearful, I'm intolerant, I'm suspicious. Not trusting. I'm not helpful. It says we asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. So, talking about this self-reliance thing, this conception of self that I like to believe the book is not vilifying self. It's trying to distinguish the difference between the parasite and the host. The parasite self will show up as the disease. The part of me that believes that is me gets a chance to see it differently. And it didn't go far enough, this conception of me being so self-involved, every single problem I have, I actually justify all of my bad behavior. Continuing to use whatever it is, it doesn't matter. That's why I love CA. Any mind-altering substances I will use until I die, it won't matter to me. That's the kind of open hole I have with this disease. And it's a God hole that needs to be filled with one thing, and that's God. It's not dicks, dollars, and donuts. It's not pussy, honey, and money. It's God. It's going to tell me how. It's going to ease me into it. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't really fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. I ask you, how do you show up as cocky? Because not all of us show up as cocky, being like the definition of cocky. Sometimes cocky comes off as, I don't want to talk to you. Anorexic as fuck. I don't want to talk to the world. I'm good where I am. You go find your own thing, right? I can lead with confidence that seems like confidence, but I can be in that fear overdrive, putting out an act on the outside to match the inside, but it doesn't. So it will show. Somewhere it will show. It says it will make it worse. Because now I'm resorting to another fake conception to mask the fear. I got to get to the causes and conditions. Ever wonder how, let's say, validation seeking constantly keeps you in a state of waiting? This waiting room in my head, constantly afraid of what may happen. right? This waiting room. I'm constantly in that state of suffering. So it says, perhaps there is a better way. Yay for the better way. We think so. And I like to read that with enthusiasm, not because I wake up every day enthusiastic, believe me. It's a process, it takes action, it takes trust. But I have to read this with the enthusiasm of a better life, a better way of waking up and going to bed and existing within the hours of the day, remaining present. It says, this is now, for we are now on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God, relying upon love. Use a conception that rings true to you. It's important to use the words in a way that you can relate. Love, tolerance, kindness, the great reality, power, powerful creator, the broad highway, Mama Earth, Vishnu, the spirit, broad highway, the omnipotent. Use whatever word speaks to your soul. Because on this new basis, we're going to communicate with that basis. It says the basis of trusting and relying upon God. You know, faith is great. This book talks about faith being important, necessary to action. But it's talking about trust. And if it makes no difference to you, think about what it takes for you to fully trust that a power will show up for you. Regardless, trust is this knowing that God's got me covered. I don't have to worry about nothing. I have to let go of my life, conduct myself in God's will. God will not be sent to voicemail. My fellow who told me that. Yeah, my fellow who said, I sent God to voicemail. We don't do that. God's always on that call. I'm the one not picking up. God is the hotline. I don't send God to voicemail. I don't send you to voicemail. You're a child of the same entity. Trusting. The point of trusting, relying upon. You see these trust exercises where, like, the person lets go and everybody holds them. You try being that person. You try letting go off a plane and trust. Even as an adrenaline junkie, it comes to a point when you're sober and with God, you gotta trust that much bigger hands are holding you. If you believe that you have caused some real madness in your life, you need some real mad dog to come through for you. So call on that dog. Tell him to come through. I trust you. I trust you, my homie. God today is my homie, shows up in places where God has always been. On the basis of trust and relying upon God. On page 53, it says, when we became addicts crushed by a self-imposed crisis, self still playing that role of imposition of crisis. We would not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else God is nothing. God either is or isn't. What was your choice to be? What was your choice to be, Kimya? What was your choice to be? Sam, Leo, Lee, Bobby, Helen, Trish, what is your choice to be, Flippa? Carly, Tommy, Liam, and Das sitting in the same room, union. What is your choice to be? Because today I read that sentence, God either is or is. There is no isn't. God is oxygen. Step outside of oxygen, that is your isn't. So, as much matter of fact as fear, so is God. That's not a coincidence. We grow from this fear. There is no vilifying fear. Remember, I said I cannot fear fear. I appreciate fear as that power, as that purifying tapas, the fire within that puts us in our column five and allows us to show up with passion, with love, with understanding, sometimes with quietness. I am not to have an opinion. I am to receive you. I am not to have feedbacks. It says we trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role God assigns. Infinite God rather than finite self. I will end. God is the vastness. I only become that expansion as a result of remembering I am with God and of God. But that finite self will get me back into what kills me. It's what makes me be restless, waiting for this meeting to end. I could even be on a meeting while I'm fucking around. Guess what? This disease gives us that ability. But today I can tell you that there's immunity to a certain point. And I will finish with that. It says, just to the extent what role we are to play as God assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think God would have us and humbly rely on God, trusting God. Does God enable us to match calamity with serenity? Matching. Doesn't say kill calamity. Match it, match it. We're not vilifying anything. This apparent calamity, it also says, has been a boon to us. I need the calamity. I need my disease. I'm a thankful addict today, because if I wasn't as desperate as I was when I came into the rooms, I would have said no to any solution. I would not have looked for a solution. I would have continued to be in and out of these rooms, just another moment of sobriety and back to it. I would not have stuck around. I would not have stayed for the 12th step. It's 12 of them. It's not an 11-step program. It's not a 13-step program. So when I came into the rooms of Cameron F., who does the 12 steps and 4 hours workshop in Toronto, and I wondered, what the fuck is this guy talking about? He sounds so educated. Why is he here? And I hate him. Right away, I hate him because he sounds like me. And I don't like that. Today, I can see that this man gifted has continues to give many without anything, any need for return. The solution that has been outlined here. Come to the workshop, see it for yourself. A fellowship has come about. A huge fellowship around the world, just like spiritual cartels right here. And that's where that solution comes from. I said, I do want to talk about this part that is a holistic approach to this 12 steps thing we're talking about. I can tell you, get a sponsor, work, sponsor someone, get into service, get a home group, get a service position. Be of helpfulness. None of that will matter if you don't follow the instructions of this book. Every single step is designed for a living. I am thus learning how to live, right? And I have to put my hand up and say, God, I don't know how to live. You do. It's all in your hands. And when I say all, it means all. I can't just say remove the bad and what blocks me from helping you and then cling on to that one person. Cling on to that one thought, cling on to that one line, cling on to that one obsession. The dark corners of the mind can get really creative when we are sober. The constant swiping and the scrolling, watching content that kills my soul, and I still continue. I review shit that kills me. I can't stay sober and live dirty. If you want to take one thing from the past 30 minutes of me hearing my own voice, which, by the way, God gives me the willingness to keep hearing myself. I do want to hear you. The only reason why I'm hearing myself is so that you can hear you. If you're taking one thing away, can you really stay sober and live dirty? What allows me to live clean and live clean to the understanding of this program is service. Is this practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking, using, acting out, thinking as intensive work with another alcoholic addict. It works when other activities fail. It also talks about this thing about material success. On page 218, it's part of a beautiful passage. It says, I cannot see the cause of this temptation now, whatever is your temptation today, even as you're here. It says, I am to learn later that it began with my desire for material success becoming greater than my interest in the welfare of my fellow people. I learned more of that foundation stone of character, which is honesty. I learned that when we act upon the highest conception of honesty that is given us, our sense of honesty becomes more acute. There's that word. Right? It also says life will take on a new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see you help someone else. In your helplessness today, you are of help to someone else that does not know 1% of what you know, even in this moment. So if that liar returns and tells you you're nothing and wants to give you guilt, shame, and worry for the rest of your life, that is fear. Take the better thought. When you see the thought, detect, connect, course correct. Detect the thought, connect with God, course correct with the next helpful action. Better than even a thought. Call someone. Get out there and breathe. Touch earth. Move your body. Don't move your body. Drink some water. Take a bath. I don't know. Helpful action. It could be the simplest things. Breathe. Hear yourself breathe. Simplest of actions. And so that fellowship promise tells me that you're going to help someone. Your loneliness will vanish. You will see a fellowship grow up about you. You will have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss, it says. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with the newcomer and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Because my job is to be a place of maximum helpfulness to others. I cannot hesitate to go anywhere where I can be helpful. It also says it's not a matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. In my codependent ways of giving, I will choke you to death with a love that is not agape. It's conditional. It's based on what I get in return. But in sponsorship, in fellowship, in the spirit of unity, we pass on without expectations of return, with eagerness, what you are willing to receive. And I have experienced that in CA. I've experienced that by every single one of you who told me there is a solution. You told me if I get a sponsor and I'm willing to take the actions, maybe you're working the steps and you're still fucking up. Show up for the next sponsorship appointment with the willingness to begin again. And I don't mean begin the steps all over again. Go through the next step, finish the steps, get into sponsorship. If you're dragging your feet on your steps, you are just going to die in the steps without ever passing it on to someone else. It's a 12-step program. I have to pass this on so I can stay current in that constant narrative, in the narrative of what is my malady, to pass it on to someone. I do want to finish by saying that I'm grateful that you have shown me what unconditional means. Because even in my unconditional, I still had conditions. Today, thankfully, I can ask God to remove those conditions and allow me to show up for you and show up for others in a capacity that God would have me be. That's why the fear removal prayer says we ask God to give us the strength and the direction to see what He would, God would, she would, it would, they would have us be. So what would God have you be today? Being convinced that self manifested in various ways, what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Consider the common manifestations of your disease and get real about the actions. Yeah. So I pray that you see without eyes, that you never need your glasses anyways, to walk without feet and to fly without wings. And join us on this side of sponsorship and living this way of life. May you be free. Thank you.